We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the lands and waters where we're recording from, the Worimi and Wanarua peoples. We acknowledge the Worimi and Wanarua elders, both past and present.
Who is on the field for the Newcastle Knights? Darren Tracy's first touch of the footy. Now Andrew John. Tries a little hole himself. He's close. Reaches out. That's a try to Andrew John. Bruce Brick from the little halfback. And that's a good reward for a great game in his debut match for the Newcastle Knights in first grade. Andrew John scores the try, and that should wrap it up for the night.
Coming to you live from Worimi and Wanarua lands, this is the Bay 53 podcast, part of the Sports Best Friends podcasting network, brought to you by your friends, Bretto and the K-Dog. Pre-season is over and the NRL season is finally upon us with the big Las Vegas doubleheader this Sunday. The first team list Tuesday for the season proper has finally dropped, but even though we have to wait another week to see who the Knights are going to name 1-17 for the men's team next Tuesday, we still thought we'd turn on the mics, put the headphones on, and get to talking about rugby league. Bretto, pre-season's over. Give it a score out of 10. I tweeted a score out of 10 in terms of how you thought the pre-season went for us, but what were your thoughts at the end of our two games?
No, I think we achieved everything we wanted to achieve in the preseason. You know, a confidence boosting win over Cronulla, they were a bit weakened, but you know, we played really well that day. And then last week, we did what we wanted to achieve. You know, Melbourne gave us a physical test. We're ready physically. We played, we played some solid football at times, but no one got hurt. So, yeah, I'm happy with that.
So I think it's a somewhat controversial statement because it sort of sounds a bit patronising. It sounds like I'm trying to excuse a loss, and I'm certainly not. But I got the impression from the game in Fiji that Melbourne wanted more out of it than we probably did. And the only reason I say that is I think that's justified in the fact that they play four out of the other five top five sides in their first five rounds for the season. So they've got a much harder start to their year than we do. So they probably feel like they need to be, you know, a little bit riper from round one than we. I mean, they got Penrith first up.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And I mentioned to you boys, like during the game, like Bellamy gave them a bit of a rev up after their first trial. They were really poor. And so they can't be out, you know, physically ready because of that sort of situation. But I think a lot of our guys, you know, had got the run they wanted the week before. And because we basically played pretty much the entire same forward pack, other than, you know, the guys coming back from All-Stars, those guys that had got the runs under their belt, you know, they were just out there to get another bit of a hit out. But no, Melbourne, you're right, Melbourne did hit the ground running. And we played each other in round three. So neither team was going to tip their hat in terms of how they were going to set up.
I thought it was interesting. Like when you think about two of the tries, I finished 28-10. And when you think about two of the tries, one of them was the great Jonah Pezet. How did we let him go? And he sort of scored on the inside of KPP, who was pretty cooked by that stage. It was his first run for the year. And I thought KP himself was like, nah, I'm not putting too much effort in there. The other one, though, that I pointed out to you, which I just thought was a weird try to be scoring in a trial, was Harry Grant darting over from dummy half. I mean, we were found wanting in defence, but for my mentality, I'm like, it's a trial. We probably weren't thinking we need to focus on ruck defence that much because they're probably looking more for a run to see how their combinations are working. So I thought those were two really soft nothing tries that they didn't matter in the game or in the grand scheme of things. And that's why overall I wasn't worried about the loss itself because the tries that they did score, I'm not saying we gave them to them, but certainly we, you know, they just felt like tries that we were like, that's not what we're here to really be worried about today. And otherwise, what we showed as a team, you know, we defended relatively well. Our handling was okay. We got some runs in the legs of players that we were really determined to see. The 18-point deficit, it just doesn't, it feels meaningless in a way.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. The Harry Grant one was an odd one. I don't see why, like, what that achieves for Melbourne. Like, yeah, you think that on the attack on the line, you wonder you're running through your shapes and whatnot. But yeah, good on you, Harry. Congratulations. You run past two kids. Well done, mate. But yeah, no, I don't. And you're right, KP definitely took a business decision on the first Jonah try. Definitely, you know, there was no sort of over. And he's coming back from a shoulder, you know, like none of us want to see him dive in and make tackles in a trial game. You're right. We definitely just went through the motions a bit. I think, as I said, like a lot of those guys had their real hit out the week before. And yeah, Fiji was, holidays was the right word, but I think it was a chance for the boys to get away and spend a few days together before the season. Melbourne were definitely more focused on that than we were.
I thought we played to the conditions really well in terms of both the physical conditions there the day you're playing in the tropics, but also the conditions in the context of where we want this team to be in 2 weeks' time as opposed to that weekend. I just really liked what I saw across the board. And the other thing I liked as well was once again, we saw a team that didn't drop their bundle after going a couple of tries down. They sort of, again, kept remembering what it was that they were there to achieve, which was get that rhythm, find those connections, learn each other's sort of combinations. And again, I'm probably focusing a lot on KPP, but that was his first real 40 to 60 minutes of rugby league with an Australian team that we've seen. And I was really happy with what, for a guy who's put his first run out there and he was playing against some pretty solid players from Melbourne, as opposed to Will Price, who had a sort of easy second half against a reserve grade Cronulla side. I thought KPP ticked all the boxes that you'd want to see him tick for a guy who's also coming back from major foot surgery.
Yeah, absolutely. Those conditions must have been a shock for him because KP was, you know, born in northern Western Australia, like lived in North Queensland for a while, lived in Brisbane. Like he said the tropical heat that had in Fiji was, you know, really draining for him on the training paddock. So a guy like, you know, Kaipu's Paul, like it must be a real shock to him. And to play, you know, he played nearly 60 minutes, you know, and the ground was heavy, the grass was long, they had a lot of storm rains. You know, you can imagine how sort of deep, you know, that water was in the ground. I was happy with, yeah, he looked leg heavy and he should look leg heavy. You know, it was 95% humidity in a heavy ground. but he definitely got a run that I think would probably kind of shock him. Like, I think he would understand like how much work he needs to do to be an NRL player.
Would that have been his first, forget game in the tropics, would that have been his first trip to tropical conditions, do you think?
Certainly the first day would have been physically exerted, like maybe been on a drinking trip with the boys. Certainly the first time he'd done any sort of major, you know, work.
Have you ever been to the tropics
before? Yeah.
It's quite an experience the first time you actually do, because I remember going overseas as like an 8-year-old, and I remember stepping off the plane out of that beautiful air conditioning, and you feel like you're suffocating.
Yeah,
like you actually think, oh, I'm gonna die here. I'm not going to be able to physically breathe. So I can imagine that playing in those conditions for the first time, you know, yeah, it certainly would be a shock to the system. Hey, like I said, we went 2-0 down fairly early. Did Inari Tuala just, I don't know if he cemented so much as rubber stamped his spot on the wing for round one?
Yeah, Inari did everything required of him. He just got the job done, didn't he? Which is all we expected, really.
I think the back line in general, I was surprised at how little involvement Greg Marju had. But having said that, Greg doesn't really need to prove himself. I think he's in a much better place than he was 12 months ago. The back line overall looked good. Did we put the mocker on Tyson Gamble a little bit in our last pod? You know, you and I have been on an interesting roller coaster ride when it comes to Tyson in respect of the pod, you know, in the chat, what we've seen on the game. I hope he was sent out there under the knowledge that he knows he's starting round one, because if he wasn't, he didn't do it. I don't think he did himself any favours on Saturday.
No, let's be honest, he played poorly, which is not like Tyson. Like, I can't even really remember him playing poorly for the club. You're right, but that's the concern, isn't the owner. The concern, if he was just Ayabu's, and look, mate, don't get injured. You're in the round one team, all good. But if Ayabu's got to be, mate, well, you're not in the team yet, you know, you need to come out and prove something to me. Well, what he proved that maybe he's not the man, but I still think he'll get picked.
Look, I think he'll get picked as well, if only because, as we know, I think you need to do a lot worse than what Tyson did to drop yourself from a team that, you know, AOB wants to show faith in.
And I think Brown's been out makes that decision easy because Cogger played well, Walker, and Cogger to 14 is automatic now, isn't it?
Okay, so this is the thing. The Sydney Morning Herald are reporting that Jaden Brayley will be fit for round one. Now, I don't know if that's the case or not, but let's put our sort of let's look into our crystal ball, as it were, or let's play a bit of imaginary team selections. You're Adam O'Brien picking that round one side, and your number one hooker is fit to go. He is cleared by medical to go for round one. Is he getting a run in that 17 next Tuesday?
No. So he's got to play 3 weeks of cup for me at least.
3 weeks, really?
Yeah, he hasn't played for 12 months. He's barely played in the last 4 years. You know, like he needs to get a base of fitness. You got to remember, like, you're not only just getting hurt, he's getting hurt at the start of seasons. So he's missing entire seasons.
Mm.
And honestly, I don't think he'll get selected until he's needed. So if we're going okay and those spine guys are all playing okay, and we're winning, we're not going awfully, I don't think he'll get picked until he's actually needed.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just curious if that'd be the same logic you'd use. What if KP had been out of the game for 12 months? Would you play him in cup to get him ready for a return, or different position, different player?
Well, different player, because KP wins your games. Jaden Brayley, we've proven we don't need Jaden Brayley to win.
Yeah.
If this was 2 years ago and we had no backup hooker, absolutely put him straight in. But I've no doubt we could play Phoenix, Cogger, or even Riley Jones there, and that would be enough for us to have a good enough team on the paddock to win.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right. I think that's probably fair enough. I think it's an interesting scenario that they sort of find themselves in, because as I understand it, this might be the first time I can remember in recorded Newcastle Knights history. We are going to have 29 fit players going into round one. That's extraordinary. Like, that's just an extraordinary thing to say about the Newcastle Knights when you think about our history with injuries, particularly as well over the last few years with the way Jaden Brayley's gone. That's just absurd.
Yeah, I was thinking about it the other day. Like, there's probably 22 guys where if any of those 22 got picked, you wouldn't be shocked. When was the last time that ever happened? You know,
Yeah, that's exactly right. I thought it was a really solid first half. It's interesting to me. I think it says a lot about where this club has gone. I mean, how long have we been recording now? 12 minutes, and it took a hypothetical that wasn't even related to him before we did talk about KP. So let's talk about the prince himself. He did everything you wanted to see from him in Fiji. The only thing I was surprised, though, was that he only played the 40 minutes. I do remember we sort of spoke about this idea, you know, give him that 10 minutes into the second half, just remind him what it's like to come out again after you've had to rest for 10 minutes. But did you see everything? Let me ask you this. Everything you saw from KP on Saturday, is he still the player we thought he was at the end of 2023?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the 40 minutes was down to conditions. You know, I really do think that it was a case of, in those conditions, you know, heavy legs or whatnot. I think AAB just wants to keep him fresh. So I think that's why he only played the 40. But, you know, he had one chance to really attack. There was one time he had, ball, sort of 40, 50 out, where he likes to really attack those edges. And he went straight through to set up Bradburn. And the rest of the game, a lot of that first half we were defending, so he didn't get much chance. So we don't need to see KP, KP's KP.
Bradman best is Bradman best as well. He looks good. He looks really good. He looks like
he's turned the corner now. This is the year he go, like, all the laughing of him being an Origin player last year, and then we're going, he played well in Origin, but still, he's not the top five or six centers. This is the year where by the end of this season, he's in the conversation for a Kangaroo jersey.
He just looks like a player that knows his body, that knows his skill level now, and he knows what he's capable of, and he looks like a player that suddenly knows what to do with it all.
Again, I think the trainers have worked out Bremen. I think his body looks different. He doesn't look as top heavy. He's huge still, but he doesn't look as top heavy. You know, like to me, I reckon they've changed his training program. And he's more cut than he used to be. Whereas he used to look like a bodybuilder, like Marju type. Whereas now he looks like, you know, a real athlete. I think that's taken pressure off his legs.
The 1-7 picks itself, as far as you and I are concerned. The 8-13. So I mean, you've got Jacob Sofidi, Crossland, Leo, Tyson. Oh, Tyson looked good.
He looks solid enough.
He looks like he's ready to go. Dylan, I'm assuming he's going to get picked. He played like a player that don't get injured. Remember what it's like to play against Storm. I don't think he particularly stood out, which I don't think he needed to. I like Adam. I want to talk to you a bit about Adam Elliott. Because I think Adam Elliott is ready to be that forward pack X factor that you said he and Heather were signed for originally. I want to talk about Kamakamitha towards the end of the game. And this is one of the reasons why I thought the Storm wanted something out of the game a bit more than the Knights did. I thought the cannonball tackles were a bit unnecessary. And both teams were guilty of dirty tackles, but there's lazy dirty tackles and then there's dangerous dirty tackles, and we've come to know from the Storm that they go out there and they tackle dangerously. That's fine, you know, you sort of take it on board. But what I really enjoyed was towards the end when Kamakamitha decided that he wanted to assert dominance, and our boys, led by Adam Elliott, were like, no, that doesn't happen with us anymore, mate. I see what you're trying to do and that's great, but we're not backing down. And I just thought they found that really good. The Knights found that really good level of aggression for a preseason game to say, look, we don't give a fuck about this, but just because we don't care doesn't mean we're going to let you do everything that you want to do. And I really liked to see that in Adam Elliott particularly.
Yeah, there's no bullying us anymore. You don't bully the Knights pack anymore. Like, there's days that we sort of question now, how much we put in the middle, but you won't bully us. None of this shit, you know, that started with, when Gal got stood up to a few years back and it sort of, you know, trickled along. But now you just don't bully us. You know, we've got the men in the pack that will not cop it. And you're right, the Storm were trying to soften us up. There's no doubt about it. The Storm know that we play them in round three and they were trying to, you know, get in our heads and soften us up. Adam Elliott especially, and at a certain time there, both the twins, they just weren't having it.
I think there's more doubt in the Storm about us now than there would have been the other way around.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I took out of that game. The Storm now know that we're on their level.
So the forward pack, again, sort of picks itself. Again, the bench, to a certain extent, based on what we know, picks itself. But having said that, the 17th spot is probably where there's going to be the most conjecture. So Cogger at 14, Daniel Sofidi at 15, Jack Hetherington at 16. You and I are of the opinion, while KPP started there for the trial at 17, there's a strong case now to be made for one of three players, KPP, Croaks, or Jed Cartwright. I don't have a problem which way the cards fall on that one. And I think whoever you pick is going to do the job for the Knights against the Raiders on the 7th of March.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that KPP is likely starting cup because I just think they want to get the minutes into him. And he had a disrupted preseason. To me, you've had a disrupted preseason. There's no point playing 15 minutes every week. There's no development in that. There's no fitness base to that. He might as well be playing 80 in cup. I think it's out of Croaks and Jed, and I would probably lean to Jed at the moment.
So, see, I'm probably leaning to Croaks.
Not because he's spot originally, you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
For the same reason you don't drop Tyson, for the same reason you give Phoenix, you know, these boys earned the right to back up what they achieved last year. Croaks didn't play on Saturday, which you and I sort of thought was a concern. Short of anything, we don't know about that. I don't really think he did anything against the Sharks that said, drop him. I think he still earned that right.
Can I just make a point there? Is the question with Croaks, but Now, for two years now, he's been playing limited minutes on the bench. Is it time for Crokes to have a big run in one position in Cup? I mean, does he need 10 weeks of playing, whether it's lock, prop, whatever they want to play him, in one position, playing the big minutes we know he can play? So the coach then goes, well, you're ready to now be a first grader in that spot.
I don't have a problem with that. But, of course, the flip side to that is that if he's got 10, because as we said, where do you play him? So do you play him at lock for 10 weeks in Cup to really get him 80 minutes cherry ripe to do that? But once he does come back into the side when everyone's fit, he's not replacing Adam Elliott.
Yeah, but the thing is, Adam Elliott, as we know, gets those niggles.
Yeah.
We want a like for like. We've got to go, well, Adam Elliott's injured, Crokes can come and play his 65 minutes at lock forward for us.
Look, I don't hate the idea. I think if it was sold to Crokes along that way, because what you got to remember is that, this is their job. And they've got to feel informed and part of the process and make sure that, and I think Adam O'Brien does that very well. I like the idea though that if they are thinking that there's that 4D chess element to the way they're sort of managing the squad now, as opposed to where I'm coming from, which is that, you know, you take it 1 week at a time. Clearly to win a comp now, you can't do that. You've got to take it in blocks. You've got to think ahead as a short term as well as long term. I don't hate the thinking behind that. I would be curious how Crokes would respond to it.
That's the Penrith approach. Remember last year, Penrith, their entire back row changed every week. Some of that was injuries, but a lot of that was that, you know, a guy would play a week or two on the bench in first grade, then he would get a start for a week or two, then he'd be back to Cup for to play 80 minutes for a couple of weeks. And that's how Penrith built their base of those guys. Like all those guys at Penrith sort of, you know, unload and end up somewhere else. That's because they don't make it, but the other clubs take them because they've seen they can do it in first grade, and see they can do it for long periods in Cup. Because to me, there's too many guys' careers go nowhere because they spend their entire 3 or 4 years in first grade as 20-minute benchies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why Jed's come up. I think Jed got sick of that and happened to him at South. And I reckon that Adam O'Brien has said to Jed, look, we've got an edge spot, you know, like Dylan Lucas is a big guy now, but we don't think KPP is ready yet. You're the number two. You know, if you can prove to me that you're ready, there's no reason why you can't get into the side. And Fritz is getting a little older. There's actually no reason why you can't be a starter in this team, in the next couple of years. I really think that we're trying to get a base of 22 guys that have played plenty of minutes, whether it's first grade or reserve grade.
So after that, though, you think Jed then is number 17 next Tuesday? You think that's the that's a goer then?
I think so. Your loyalty might get Crokes in the team,
but I think
at some stage over the next few weeks, barring injuries, at Crokes is going to be playing Cup big minutes because we all say Crokes hasn't developed. He hasn't developed. He doesn't play. He plays 10 or 15 minutes in a different position every week. You know, he doesn't play.
Yeah,
you can't develop. Like that's why in the European soccer, young players get set out on loan so they can play. You know,
I can see Uncle Ron just getting in the ear of Adam O'Brien, just saying, "Give me Crokes for a couple of months. I'll send you back. I'll send you back a first grade 300 gamer. Just give me a couple of weeks to work with him."
You are listening to the Bay 53 podcast.
The New South Wales Cup team is probably going to be a much bigger focus for a lot of Knights fans this year, if only because you think of what we saw over the preseason. And I'll just read you out some of these names. Fletcher Meyer, Latia Mokadreke, Fletcher Sharp, Tom Jenkins, Brody Jones, Jed Cartwright, David Armstrong, Riley Jones, Thomas Kent. From what we've seen of these guys, not just over the preseason but the last 12 months, there's actually a lot of quality there. So you would expect them to be doing not just a good job in Cup for a couple of wins here and there and get there, but putting that pressure on those places in first grade to maybe drive the boys in first grade to want to do a bit more to hold their spot. So there's a lot of names there that I think 12 months ago if we'd seen a 30-man squad, you would have just cut the bottom half and focused on the top. But what we've seen so far, as a Knights fan, you can't really do that anymore. You actually have to get to know the 30-man squad because they're all putting such strong cases forward to play at NRL level.
Yeah, there's none of those guys there you panic if they're playing first grade.
Yes, 100%.
Obviously, Fletcher Sharp's played against KP's injured, so it's automatic panic mode. But, but obviously, KP's going to play Origin. Whether KP plays 1 or 14 for Queensland, he's going to play Origin. So one of those guys have got to play fullback at some stage, and you're not going to panic, are you? Whether it's Fletcher Sharp or it's Will Price. So, like, it's not panic stations, is it? Yeah, they can get the job done. There's so many. To me, the really impressive thing the club's done is the depth in the halves. So the people talk about the spine. The spine's the key to any team, but you can't have a lot of depth in the spine because you can only play, you know, one in each position, and the good young players move on and there's no path to them. That's what happened to Penrith. But it's the back row, it's the outside backs where you can build depth. The good clubs have got all their depth. Like Brisbane, you know, Brisbane got a glut of back rowers, a glut of outside backs. Penrith are exactly the same. The Storm, not at the moment, but over the years, they were like that. They're the positions where you need to build that depth. They're the positions where you get a lot of injuries. You know, your kick returners, your guys that, you know, are doing a lot of defensive work on the edges. You need to have depth in those spots, and we've never had depth in those spots. And we actually do now, and that's what gives you confidence. Like there's no outside back or back row got injured, I'd go, we're in trouble. Frisbee out wouldn't be great, but we can handle it for a couple of weeks.
I want to talk just a little bit more about, because I'm sort of looking at, so like I said, the result in the end didn't really matter. We got out of what we needed. But I am looking at a couple of the other results from week two of the preseason challenge. It's funny to me, the Roosters, Rabbitohs, Broncos and Manly playing reserve grade teams in a preseason challenge, which we have to mention the Broncos won in the end. I don't know what the richest club in the NRL needs to do with an extra $100,000, but there you go. Anything that springs to mind with you, Bretto, that if... Were there any results that sort of you think are worth raising concerns if you were a member of any of those fan bases? There's a couple for mine that jump out. If I cared about the Titans, I think their fan base should be concerned. But I think the Raiders and still the Tigers should be not alarmed, but definitely alert about where their teams are at going into the 2024 season.
The Tigers definitely, you know, they basically beat a Warriors that had 12 men for 60 minutes and were playing a reserve grade team anyway. They beat them by, what, 2 or 4? And then Sir George ran all over him last week. After Sir George had played their full strength team the week before against South, reserve grade basically, got absolutely battered. So, yeah, the Tigers, it's certainly concerning. Canberra were good to work with in the first week. So I'm not so – I think Canberra about what we thought they were. I don't think they're a spoon team, but I think they're a bottom 4 or 5 team. No.
Yeah, I don't think they're a spoon team by any – and I'm absolutely not underestimating them to come up in round one and play some more chaos ball and get them the result.
Canberra will be that team. Canberra will – you know, some weeks you'll go, well, Jesus, they're pathetic. And other weeks you go, well, how have they done that? That'll be Canberra this year. And I think their fan base is accepted. I think their fan base, you know, they run fourth, their fan base will be going, yeah, that's about right, you know. I think that's their sort of spot. The Warriors played pretty weak teams both times, and I don't know, that always worries me. Like when you're a young team, like the Warriors aren't, you know, it's like they're the Storm, it's not like they're the Roosters or, you know, or Penrith. They're a young team, and to me, I don't know, it felt like a bit of arrogance about them going, well, we're going to be a top side, you know, we just won't get anybody injured. That always worries me because a lot of times that means a slow start to the season.
The only concern I really have about the Warriors, because I absolutely do not want to downplay what they did last year, and I have an ulterior motive for not wanting to downplay it. My bigger concern for the Warriors isn't, oh, can they back it up? It's, can their coach back it up? Because as we've sort of discussed, when it comes to, you know, a rookie coach, rookie coaches generally have really great first years or really awful
first years. There's a lot of good one-year coaches, isn't there?
And yeah, sometimes, you know, when you get to the second, it's how do you back it up? Anybody can have, how do you maintain that energy to go around again the next year and go, right, we've got to do it all, but we've got to do it fresher. People have been studying us. Do I have it in me to find something fresher? Do I just rely on what worked? I think the big what if about the Warriors is their coach. Not, and I'm not saying that he won't do it, but I just think how a rookie coach decides to react to that second season will have a, that will be the key factor in how this Warriors team goes this year. That and whether SJ can stay fit again, because he did have a career year last year.
Yeah, there's definitely, I'm with you about Webster. Like, I think he can coach, but it's interesting that, you know, that none of the big city clubs wanted him when he was coming out of Penrith. They were, you know, Soroldo is the one they all sort of think. So that sort of makes you think, well, that's an interesting sort of thing. And maybe they just misjudged him, fair enough. But there's a record of guys that have one or two great years. You know, you Seibold. Like Seibold, when he started at South, looked like he'd be one of the greatest coaches of all time. Within 2 years, he was, you know, he got Brisbane a wooden spoon. Yeah, you're right. And I think Webster can coach, but that's an issue. Like, until you've done it a second and a third year, Todd Payton's had one good year in 3 or 4 years he's been there now. He's had one good season. Yeah, no, the Warriors, like, you look at their side, they've got a lot of depth, all that kind of thing. But to me, SJ has to be SJ like he was last year. Because as much as RTS is great, he's playing at centre. Centres don't win you games. You know, like, you got Adam Fanua Blake up front, Toby Harris up front, great. But those guys aren't going to win you games consistently. The Warriors have had them for years, you know, and not got the job done. I have real concerns about the Warriors hype machine. Sort of, there's always one team that comes in super hyped. Last year it was the Cowboys, and they did nothing. I think that might be the Warriors this year. I think they'll make the eight, but I don't think they're going to make top four.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Knights then, because that's what we do quite well. If you think there's one team that's always gets overhyped and crashed, at least we don't have to worry about that happening to the Knights, because you can't accuse anybody of hyping the Knights going into this season. Mate, can I ask you, and I'm reluctant to drag Nathan Brown any more than we have to, because I think we hold on to enough listeners barely as it is, well, going over that sort of old territory, but are we still wearing that reputation of the spoon years? Because we're a team that's gone to the finals 3 out of the last 4 years, but people will tell you last year is a fluke. What do the Newcastle Knights have to do to be hyped? And I don't care if they are or they aren't, but this narrative that sort of seems to exist around this team where Adam O'Brien's coaching ability is clearly based on 2022, not the 3 years surrounding it. This Knights team is clearly the 2022 season and the spoon years, not the fact that we've gone to 3 out of the last 4 finals campaigns. And the thing about it is that you can say as much as you want, or it doesn't matter what other people say, but unfortunately we live in a world where perception is reality. And those things do actually get listened to by other fans, by broadcasters, by potential sponsors. So the more something, it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy where the more you talk down the Knights, despite what we actually do on the field, that can have impacts in terms of how we want to operate. So as much as it doesn't matter, it kind of does. What does this team need to do for people to finally say, oh yeah, no, the Knights, they're okay?
But actually, I honestly don't think until we're, you know, premiership contenders, that's ever going to change. I think that, you know, in the social media age, as social media become a thing, you know, for sports fandom. So, you know, when Twitter and Facebook really took off in terms of sports stuff, you know, in the mid, you know, 2014, 2015, the Knights were garbage. And so I think a lot of people growing up on, you know, in their little sports sites, the Knights are garbage.
So they never get
talked about. So, and then, you know, in those 20 and 21 were finals teams, but everyone just assumed, we just waited for it to drop off. And then we got beat in the finals, RC, same old Knights. And then a bit of hype. Then 2022, we started to give you the hype. Remember, after that Penrith near win, they were a man short.
The draw, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the draw, yeah. Yeah, you know, like everyone was, oh, maybe the Knights are good. And what happens? We shit them for the next 10 months, 8 months, you know. so that bit of hype went. So I think we did that to ourselves. I think last year everyone's gone, well, they've
had Let me back up. You're talking about the round three loss. When Mitchell Barnett went.
Narrowly, you know, late in the game. Yeah. You know, and there was plenty of people on Twitter after that said, oh, you know, well, maybe this Knights team are for real, you know, like that's and an incredible performance. Yeah. And we weren't just bad the rest of that season, we were pathetic. Mm. You know, and then last year, the narrative sort of sticks as the season kicks on, you know, to mid season that, yeah, the Knights are okay, but they're no threat to the eight. And then you have that great run, and it's easy to wipe off a great run again. That's the one great run. So this year needs to be a Warriors type season where we're consistently good. You know, where Warriors were last year, you know, where no one expected much of the Warriors last year, but every week they were consistently good. And as the season went along, people went, oh, okay, this team is a top eight team. Oh, this team is a chance of the four. Oh, this team is a definite top four. You know, that's the sort of season we need to have.
Well, it's funny you should say that about the Knights last season, because some critique and predictions for 2024 have come our way, not describing the first half of the Knights season last year as just good or okay, being described as hot garbage. And I think this is where it starts to bother me, is that you absolutely write off the Knights this season. We've proven nothing. I get that. I get that. I can even, there's a part of me that can sit back and go, yes, we lost our leading try scorer. Yes, you know, you can't be relying on a 10-game winning streak to get you to fifth. I take all of that on board. They are at least legitimate, objective criteria that you can point to and say they need to find a way to not rely on that to be good. I absolutely get that. But what has started to creep into the narrative is this idea that the Knights were just lucky and they were otherwise garbage last year. So a critique sort of came our way, where the reason the Knights were going to miss the finals this year is because, you know, they were lucky to get to fifth when they were in 14th spot with seven rounds to go. Now, that's actually not correct. We were 11th, not 14th. And I know you're still outside the eight at that stage, but being three places outside of the eight with seven rounds to go is a far different story to being three places off the bottom with seven rounds to go. So that's the start there. But I think the part that really started to irritate you and I is this just sort of merging of the timeline last year. This idea that the last seven rounds, they hammered the hapless Bulldogs twice for a combined score. Well, that didn't happen. We actually only played the Bulldogs once in those last seven rounds. We dusted up an equally pathetic Tigers and Dragons. Well, our reserves beat the Dragons. And sure, we beat the Tigers, but we still had to beat the Tigers. We beat a non-finals team, the Dolphins, by two. Well, yeah, sure, but they scored 18 points when we were down to 12 men ourselves. And you know my thoughts on the Warriors' loss. You know, the Warriors played great that day, but again, that was off the back of a wider context. So that's a paragraph of just bullshit. there's actually very little in there that's actually based in any fact in terms of how we went last year to where we got to fifth. So this is when it starts to irritate me, is that you have tangible, objective stuff that you can use to say, this is why I don't think they'll be this good this year. But instead, they've just started to make shit up. And it...
Remember how it's supposed to employ when Jacko got injured? Remember Jacko got injured and was like, well, that's it, the Knights are dead.
Yep.
We didn't lose another game until the Warriors game.
Yeah. And like I absolutely agree with you that the Knights still need to prove a lot of doubters wrong this year. But what I'm saying is that I see a team that I don't think is going to have to rely on a 10-game winning streak, because this idea that we were hot garbage for the first half of the season, every metric that we can imagine except for goal kicking actually had us in the top half of the competition last year. And as you and I have pointed out, really last year we had two bad performances. And those are the reasons why we continue to say, I think we can go into this season with great hope for this team.
Absolutely. The hot garbage thing, it got my goat. I just thought that's just so not fair on the guys. You know, you miss KP for a large swathe. You know, Brails gets injured early, so you've got to change two parts of your spine immediately. The first game against the Warriors, if KP doesn't get the dodgy body HIA, we'd probably win that game. And the Warriors turned out to be, you know, almost impossible to beat at home. Round three against the Dolphins, we had a team of children because of the bullshit for the week before against the Tigers.
And I just quickly, wasn't that a five-day turnaround as well from the Tigers game?
Exactly, five-day turnaround, exactly. The Manly draw was goal-kicking. If Lockie Miller could kick a cat, we would have won that game. The Penrith game was goal-kicking. We threw that away on goal-kicking. The Brisbane loss was a bit of brilliance at home by what turned out to be, yeah, the second-best team in the competition.
And goal-kicking.
And goal-kicking. The Cronulla loss on cost was disappointing, and that's why Adji made the changes of the spine and Miller out, KP fullback, because that was disappointing. The Parramatta was hot garbage, absolutely. But that makes one hot garbage loss, one loss where the coach realised this isn't working, and that means that your first, what? So he's saying the last 7 weeks, he's saying the first 20 weeks were hot garbage. Get a fucking life, champ. You're a moron.
Brutto, the Vegas doubleheader to kick off the set. Can I ask you something? How do you feel about the Vegas doubleheader? Have you started to get excited about it? Do you think it's something worth getting excited, or is it really just something?
I have no interest in all that bullshit, because it's purely designed for journos and NRL executives to get a junket. While we're sitting here in the bush watching country football die, and they're spending money to entertain themselves in Vegas, get fucked.
I know this is a small thing, but this to me is actually why the whole concept of it irritates me. So, because we live in an age now where it's cheaper and it's more affordable that commentators don't travel to games anymore. So they sit in studios and they watch it on the screen, and that's how they commentate the games now. And I think that to me is why there's just this just utterly disingenuous feel about this whole thing, that Las Vegas, everybody needs to get over there, commentators included. You've got to get over there to call this game. And I'm like, again, you can call that just as comfortably from your studio in Sydney, because we're being told that cost efficiency is important now, but suddenly you put a rugby league game on in Vegas and it's, you know, all stops to whatever we can do to get everybody there.
And they've had people there for weeks. They've had Fletcher Hines been there for weeks. Like, they've had people there for, it's fucking ridiculous. Can I also say, the NRLW should be filthy, because they don't leave the studio for NRLW. They won't even come to Newcastle for NRLW games, but they'll spend all that money to go to Vegas. Like, the NRLW should be absolutely filthy. The amount of money that gets wasted on that, while the NRL fought for 12 months with no CBA because they wanted to save $5. It's the most. Okay, time for a rant. First rant of the year, people. Strap in.
I'm strapped in.
PVL is the worst thing that's ever happened in rugby league, because he changes the game every week. You don't know what you're watching. The rules change all the time. The way the referees handle the game changes every fucking week. The NRLW get treated like a second-class citizens until it suits him. Then he bobs his stupid fat head up on TV next to the best women athletes in the country and pretends like he gives a shit. Fuck off, you moron. Those women should punch you in your stupid fat head. It really drives my... It pisses me off so much that we get Tasha Gale and the bullshit they dish up out of the studio in Sydney, while these idiots then go to Vegas and spend tens of thousands of dollars every freaking day to stay in the hotels over there. And we can't get our two-time defending premiers, Newcastle Knights, a bit of bloody good coverage on TV, or at least a bit of bloody unbiased commentary. It's absolutely disgusting how the NRL treat all the players, but how they treat the women's players while they're wasting that money. And as I said, country football is dead. Some of the biggest country towns in New South Wales, with populations that aren't small, you know, 10, 15,000 people, can't put a football team together because they can't get insurance. It's just disgusting. Like, I can't get over how in the pocket the media of that moron that not only sold rugby league out, he sold horse racing out, he sold everything he gets involved in, is like a crime syndicate. It's horrendous.
I'm no expert. I just love the game. But more than that, I love the community. If you're a fan of rugby league or the NRL, you'll love Big T's Tees. Unique, affordable, and made for fans. Find a link to the online store in the show notes below. You'd look good in one of Big T's Tees.
Hey, speaking of the game being poorly run as well, while we're on that that rant, did you see Nick Politis during the week and his new idea for the 20-team, two-conference system? Which is just so biased towards...
Sydney Conference and everybody else.
Yeah. And I'm just like, well, of course that works well for you, buddy. You guys never have to leave Sydney. Meanwhile, the other half of the comp are fucking racking up the Qantas points, travelling all over the place just to play some footy. Well, you guys can sit in Sydney for fucking 6 months of the year.
You know the funny thing about all that? I guarantee if that happened, they would try and sell the rights to Sydney at a different amount so they get all the money. They would be selling the media rights of Sydney in their own little entity. I guarantee you.
No, I can absolutely see it. But I think the more interesting thing to me is that I agree with you, but I think people in Sydney overvalue how important they think they are to the game at the moment. See, just off the top of the mind, like, I think the three far more important teams out of the majority of Sydney teams to rugby league are Brisbane, Warriors, Storm.
Yeah, I'll tell you now. There's six teams that matter in terms of financial. The game, the six teams that matter: Brisbane, Melbourne, the Warriors, South. I try not to get through. South, Parramatta, and Newcastle. They're the only six teams that matter in terms of the financial arrangement for rugby league. All those other Sydney teams could disappear and no one would notice.
So let's talk about the Roosters then, because I know that the two Roosters fans we have are blowing up right now, hate listening to us. Why are the Sydney Roosters not? Because they're one of the biggest clubs in the comp, and they're one of the most financially well-backed clubs in the comp. So why are they not in your big six clubs in the NRL when it comes to finance in rugby league?
Because if they disappear, nothing changes. Money in rugby league is not disappearing. It all goes to the Souths. Not one single junior disappears. They're all Souths juniors anyway. That whole area just becomes Souths. And Souths put the money into that area anyway. The big end of town might get upset for about 10 minutes, and they'll all just put their money into Souths.
Because that's the thing. That's always been one of yours and my criticism of the Roosters, is that we get that you're a big club, but you're sort of a self-funded, like Nick Politis took them on as a hobby and then he realized he could make some coin out of it. But from an impact perspective, and this is why I always make fun of their home crowds, is that it's exactly as you say. If they disappeared, nothing would change. See, when Souths disappeared, something changed. And people were like, shit, we've got to get them back. But if the Roosters disappeared, the 3,000 people that they usually get to their home games would try to march and nothing would happen and we'd all move on with our lives.
Yeah, so the Roosters are like the Vegas teams in American sports. Everyone thinks the Vegas teams are important. They're important because they attract gambling. The Roosters attract some big end of town money, but people in America would still gamble without the Vegas teams, and people still invest money in rugby league without the Roosters.
Hey, Brett, I could sit here bagging the Roosters for the next hour, but I unfortunately do have other things that I have to attend to. Mate, talk to me about the season more generally. I mean, where are we going? Are we just playing 27 rounds so that we can have seven teams get to the finals and knocked out in Penrith four-peat? Is that the way this year is going? Or can the Knights throw something up? Can Brisbane go that next step from a grand final loss? Are the Warriors going to build on that momentum from last year? Where do you really see this season going in the NRL?
I've sat down and tried to work out who beats Penrith. I can't come up with a team.
Yeah.
I will not ever tip Brisbane win the comp while Kevin Walters is their coach. I think Brisbane have the best roster in the competition. They have a huge advantage, like playing at Suncorp. I don't think they can. I think they're still going to be up there, but they can't win with Kevy. He's so bad. The reason why Penrith ran over them is because his substitutions are fucking awful, and not just awful on grand final day. They're awful throughout the season. So their big games play minutes they don't need to play. Like I can't have Brisbane while Kevy's coach. Penrith are Penrith, but you, how did the team win four straight and make five straight grand finals in a salary cap league in the Madeira? Like, it's unheard of. Like, I keep thinking, well, they can't do it again. But who's going to stop them? Melbourne, to me, it takes a step backwards. I think Melbourne are a bottom half of the eight team. The Warriors, as I said, I'm not high on them because they need to prove they can do it. Same with the Knights. Cronulla have proven they're not up there. I don't rate. The team that could emerge is the Roosters. The Roosters have got the to do it.
So I've been surprised how much commentary I've seen about the idea that the Roosters roster is a myth, and that people still think it's 2019, and the Roosters have never moved on from that. I don't subscribe to that. I'm with you. I still think they have a top four roster to contend. But the thing is that when it comes to them,
it's their coach. Their coach.
Well, I was going to say was, yeah, when it comes to the Roosters playing the Panthers, they've clearly shown over the last two or three years they are not up to the task.
No, I rated Trent Robinson. I thought he was the second best coach in the comp 3 or 4 years ago. I thought it was Bellamy, then Robinson. There was a huge gap. But Robinson has proved that, you know, 2013 was the Sonny Bill premiership. 18 and 19 with Cooper. He hasn't proved to me yet that he can do it without, you know, an all-timer in terms of, like, Cooper was an all-time premiership winner, you know. He was a guy that could come in and win your premiership because he was that smart. Sonny Bill was just, you know, that roster was stacked. Sonny Bill was just, you know, what in terms of ability, one of the elite players to ever play. They've had injuries in the last few years, so, you know, it's not like they've had a smooth run. But that team not being a contender since they won the comp is horrible. Like, they should be. That roster is still as good as any roster in the competition. I think there's holes in it that, you know, that people don't see. But there's holes in every roster because it's a salary cap league. But you look at it this week. They've got JD Watch and Dom Young not up for selection, once suspended, one injured. But they've still been left out. Angus Crichton has been left out. Connor Watson's been left out. They've left out two or three other guys that are, you know, back to first grade in every other squad. It's just, yeah, I don't see how people think they don't have the roster for it. But I don't trust them anymore. That's my thing with the Roosters. I don't trust them.
The Roosters have got a really interesting start to the season. I'm only just realizing now that the four Vegas teams all play each other over the first two rounds, which makes sense. Or they switch partners over the first two rounds. But, yeah, the Roosters have got an interesting, like, there's a lot of landmines there. Broncos, Manly, Rabbitohs, Panthers. Then they're away to the Bulldogs in round five. And then they come up to Newcastle in round six. They host the Storm in round seven. I mean, I don't think that's an easy start to the season. And it's funny as well, because the reason I was looking at that was I was looking at the Broncos. The Broncos have a horrid start to the season. So Roosters in Vegas, then they host the Rabbitohs, away to Penrith. And they'll be... Penrith, we know, are slow starters to the season because the Panthers play the Storm round one, and you can't back against the Storm in round one. And so the Panthers will probably be looking to lock in as many wins as they can there. But anyway, and then you've got the Cowboys game in round four. Now, Cowboys, I think, have slid away, but, you know, Broncos always get the best out of them. Away to the Storm in round five. Storm, the Broncos and the Roosters, they don't have easy starts to the season. And as you and I have always said, you absolutely don't win the premiership in the first five rounds of the season. But fucking hell, you can lose it. So, yeah, it's not an easy start to the season for two teams that are tipped to continue. Intend.
I actually heard someone say the other day, and I completely agree with them. The NRL have made a really interesting... This is going to be really interesting because there's so many big games early in the season. They come that middle of the season, when around Origin time, fuck, there's going to be some dour football. Because you're going to have like the worst teams in the comp are going to be playing the good teams. But the good teams obviously going to be, you know, without Origin players, whatever.
Without Origin players, yeah.
There's going to be some horrific games of football in that middle of the season.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll tell you what. I look at the Panthers' start to the season. So they're away to the Storm. They host the Eels, then the Broncos, away to the Roosters, and then they're away to the Eagles. So, yeah, those are five big games to start the season. Hey, I want to talk to you about something that was brought to my attention, which has really pissed me off. I don't know how this has happened. A Cowboys fan was saying to me, and I'm reluctant to talk about the Cowboys because, you know, their fans love us so much, but the Cowboys And I don't want to go all raw sports on my ability to not count the last seven rounds. But from round 18 onwards, the Cowboys only play two away games for the rest of the season. So at one point they play one away game in nine rounds. That is absurd. I do not know how that has happened. So in round 18, they host the Eagles. Then they have a bye. Then they have two home games against the Dogs and the Sharks. Then they're away to the Tigers. Oh, hang on. Yeah, no, then they're away to the Tigers. Then they have two more home games against the Broncos and Raiders, a bye, and then they host the Storm. And I'm like, they fucking never leave Queensland. How has that happened?
I honestly don't. It's quite funny, you know. The NRL did that, the whole Canada thing where they pay that company a fortune, and the draws are so bad. Like I don't get how the draws are so bad. Like it makes no sense to me at all.
I've got to be honest with you, mate. If I'm the Cowboys and I'm looking at that, there's a 9 week stretch where they have six home games and only one away. I'd almost be keeping my powder dry for the first half of the season, going, just try to grab as many wins as you can. And we'll go, I'm actually tipping the Cowboys to make the top eight now, purely off the back of the way their season ends.
I'm going to go the other way. I think they get off to a slow start because of the amount of away games they have. And I think they're so mentally weak.
Yeah.
You know, that they're too far behind.
We have seen that with teams in the past.
I will note, though, that, of course, we get them, you know, in early March, you know, when all the other teams are getting them, you know, in August to play up there.
Mate, I'm not even worried. I'm absolutely convinced that Adam O'Brien is a super coach, has done it again. He knew that he wanted that Cowboys round two win under his belt, and he made sure that we went to Fiji to get match fitness for it. Hey, I want to talk to you just quickly. Nope, I've immediately forgotten it. That's really disappointing. That's exactly what I wanted to talk to. I wanted to talk to you about the Storm game we're hosting in round three. I've got a feeling that there's a double significance for that. One, I think Adam O'Brien will want to be backing up his win over the Storm last season to show that wasn't a fluke. But two, I don't think Adam O'Brien has ever won a round three game as a first grade coach.
Oh, really? Because yeah,
so I think that's something.
We've had a few 2-0 starts and then shit the bed round three, haven't we?
Correct. Because I think we drew against the Panthers and then something happened
We had the 2022, we had the two wins and then the Penrith loss. Yeah.
So 2022 was the Penrith loss and then last year was the Dolphins loss. And
2020 was one. The two wins, then we had COVID, then we come back with the draw.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
And 2021, I'm absolutely positive for some reason. So, yeah, so I think, you know, I mark round three down in your calendars, I think, because Adam O'Brien comes across as that coach, as we said last year, he likes to get those monkeys off his back. He likes to, you know, we said they won marquee games, they won landmark games, they made sure they win. But I think rounds two and three will be very significant for Adam O'Brien, because I think he wants to win in Townsville and he wants to win in round three. Obviously, it's not a fait accompli when it comes to the season proper, but you and I both agree it's Penrith's to lose again.
Down the blind, Andrew John. Inside for Albert. Albert will score. Newcastle have won the grand final.
Can we talk about the World Cup Challenge? Because I thought it was a really good game with some of the worst refereeing you're ever going to see in your entire life. I absolutely have all the sympathy in the world for every Panthers fan watching that. That Wigan try that was awarded where it is a clear 6 inches from the try line is absurd. That is actually – and that to me is an incident as to why I've always said video refs don't work, because whatever technology you put in the game, you still need humans to interpret it. And that you will still get things wrong. You saw it yourself with your Liverpool team getting fucked over by VAR against Tottenham earlier this year. Listen to me, people. Video technology does not make refereeing better. All it does is create more uncertainty. There, I've said it. But the World Cup challenge. Great advertisement for rugby league.
Yeah, it's a great concept. People said, oh, you know, it's got no use in the game. I don't agree with that. I think it's got a real use. I think it's a game that should always happen. But I don't. You know what bugs me, Bud, is the fact that, you know, I hear all the Pommy people going, well, you know, that's home ground advantage and it's always been like that. And are we a professional sport or not? Because if we're a professional sport, that shit shouldn't happen anymore. Because like, I get there's ones that are subjective, but that the idea that like you can look at that and clearly see, yeah, I think 6 inches is generous. I think he's a foot short. And then the video ref go, well, I can't tell. So, you know, you think it's a try. Let's go with a try. Like it just, and the Liam Martin one-on-one strip, like late in the game, like it just, I don't understand. I don't understand why you got to have guys that aren't up to it. Like the NRL stand, referee stand is awful too, but surely you've got to put the person you think is the best referee in the World Club Challenge game. Because I don't know who that Pommy guy is. I don't know who's the best referee. I don't know who's their worst referee. But Jesus Christ, I would want him refereeing under 10s. He's awful.
You know what bothers me the most as well about this idea that technology and giving technology to referees will improve their ability is that I'm not saying that technology doesn't have a place, but it's the idea that technology just fixes everything. What about, like, just working with referees to teach them strategy, skills, techniques about what to look for, you know, utilizing experience? Why aren't former referees, you know, getting back in and passing on knowledge into how, you know, why wasn't Bill Harrigan, as arrogant as he was, he probably was the best referee in the game. Why isn't he going back? And why isn't the NRL bringing him back and paying him a fortune to say, give that knowledge to future referees so that we can get the best referees so that video technology for, I think video technology for referees should be there as a backup, not the immediate go-to to sort of fix it. And I've always maintained the thing about video refereeing for me is that if you can't tell a decision, if you can't change the decision after two or three uses of the video, then just stick with what's on the, just keep moving. The World Club challenges are different. That should have been, that absolutely should have been clear as day, but I think that's more of a failing in terms of how it's used, not the fact that, you know, video technology. You know what I mean? Is the idea that video refs were brought in to, you know, fix the howler, but all they did was start finding, well, what are more areas that we can get in the game to dispute? And it's just created this more uncertainty.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think that a big issue with the video referees in rugby league is the fact that they all do it differently. So some will go to the microscope and look at every little part of a play. And it's got to be decided what you want from video ref. You know, do you want it to be perfect and everything go over the fine-tooth comb? Yeah, do you want three or four looks?
And don't get me started. I promise you, I do not give a fuck about getting it completely right anymore. I think you need to find that balance between cricket is the perfect example. No one, it's slow enough as no one wants to be standing around just to get. I just want decisions. I don't know. I kind of feel like that Simpsons episode where that toy maker, like, you guys don't know what you want, but I can promise you the amount, the lengths that they're going to now to say we've got to get it right. No, it's too much, because this is what we need to accept. Decisions are going to go, they're not always going to go the way you think they should. Just because you disagree with this decision doesn't. So we've got to get rid of this idea that, oh, we're just doing it to get it right. The idea should be we are doing everything in our power to ensure that the rules are applied as appropriately as they can while maintaining the enjoyment of the game. That's what the standard should be.
It's like with the forward pass offside sort of thing, you know. Well, we can't rule on forward passes because we can't get the angles right and whatnot on the TV coach, but we can still rule whether someone's offside when they're 40 meters away from the guy kicking the ball. Like, it just makes no sense. Knock-ons is another one, you know. Like, it makes, you know, tap forward and tap backs. Like, you're not going to get them all right, so don't try and get them all right. Yeah. And you just go with your referee. But as you need two referees on the field, so you at least got two sets of eyes on it, so that the video ref can't make a decision. You've at least got, you know, four eyes on it, and then if they still get it wrong, well, guess what? That's life.
Hey, Brett, we as usual have been talking way longer than we intended to. I don't think we intended to talk about video ref today, and our lawyers are going through your rant as we speak. I do want to say one thing, though. I just want to say one thing before we go, and it's only in case I do forget to say it next week before the season starts. I really do want did want to just send a message to Knights fans to guys. It actually doesn't matter if we pick up a few losses to start the season. Now, I know that sounds like loser speak for I've already lost faith in the team. I haven't. But if there's one thing any A, rugby league fan, but particularly B, Newcastle Knights fans should learn from 2023 is that as much as you can set yourself up to start the season's not over if you're not winning it at the beginning. So Penrith lost their first game of the season to the Broncos. I think at one stage people were like, oh, is the dynasty over? I think they might have even lost two out of their first three. Anyway, Penrith have never started the season going, well, we're going to win our first 10 and then cruise to a premiership. And again, as Bretto and I have said, aside from goal kicking last year, I absolutely believe that the Knights played exactly the way they intended to. They just wanted to ice a couple more wins than they could have, but they missed goal kicks. It's okay to lose some games to start the season. We don't have to go into panic mode if that happens. What we as a fan base need to be doing to start the season 2024 is looking at the performance and looking at circumstances around results. Because as we learned in 2022 as well, winning your opening two games by comprehensive margins may not necessarily mean anything over the entire season. So I just wanted to make sure that I'll never say it's okay to lose, and absolutely winning is all generally preferable. But just stick with this team. I think this team has done enough over the past few years where we can get to June, and we should be able to reassess and remark expectations. But I really do have faith in what I think this team can achieve this year. And if we don't see it in the first month, don't lose faith. Just let's see out the process.
I think it's pretty well established now that you've got to balance your season out. And I think Alan O'Brien's realised that, you build into your season. Because, we all used to laugh at the old St. George were April premiers, March premiers, and that was they'd always fall over. Even South last year, South were 12-1, 12-2, top of the table going into Origin last year. Mm. And, and missing the eight. Penrith are never in front after a few weeks. Like, it's just, clubs have realised that with 27 rounds, 24 games, you can't be up the entire season. And it's far better to be up, come sort of early July to, even mid-July to the end of August, when you need to be rolling. And that's just how it is. And I think Adam O'Brien's realised that after, a few seasons where we started well, fallen off, and then be limped to the finish line. Even in 21, we had that run at the end of the season. We were limping across the line, They were 1-2 point wins every week. Now, I think that Adam O'Brien has realised that, you're right. If you're after 16 games, if you're 9-7, you're ready to go. You're ready to roll.
Okay, so I just wanted to, and again, I'm not saying we have to replicate this. That is not what I'm saying. But I do just want to point out that Penrith, to start their season last year, went, they lost to the Broncos, they beat the South, they lost to Parramatta, and they were eighth after three rounds. So, and like I said, I'm not saying, that's what we need to do to win a comp. What I am saying is that, they've sort of had patchy form. In fact, the Panthers were as low as eighth after nine rounds last year. So nine rounds into the season, the greatest team of all time was still mid, I just want to remind fans that we Adam O'Brien and this Newcastle Knights men's team, they are playing a long game in 2024. And let's just try and support them accordingly.
That's how our girls have done it. Our girls have done this season. It's very similar. Our girls always start slow. Even when they're winning, they really patch early in the season and they roll into the finals. It's just how it gets done now.
Hey, thanks everybody. As usual, we really do appreciate everybody who does listen to our podcast. We still don't know why, but we do appreciate you nonetheless. We'll catch us all on the socials. Enjoy the Vegas kickoff this weekend. But for Knights fans, let's just remember that is just the precursor to the main course on the 7th of March.
Thanks, guys. But I think that a big issue with the video referees in rugby league is the fact that they all do it differently. So some will go to the microscope and look at every little part of a play, and others.
Oh, it sounds like we've lost Bretto. Bretto's dropped out, everybody.
Sports Best Friends would like to thank you for listening right to the end. You are our kind of people. Find other great sports podcasts in our family by subscribing. And remember, social media isn't a bad place. You just need to follow the right people.